Sylvia and me.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Upper Deck, the national full-service virtual gym that has reinvented the at-home workout experience. Upper Deck has more than 30 strength and cardio classes a week. Named Best Fitness Club in the Gold Coast for 2020, Upper Deck brings the gym to you with live coaching and motivation. Upper Deck's unique classes are interactive. They have two coaches, one leading your workout and one keeping her eyes on you, providing feedback and encouragement in real time. For a free week of unlimited virtual classes with no strings attached, email info@upperdeckfitness.com and let Upper Deck know you're a Sylvia and Me listener. Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
Hello, I'm Katie Hill, the former Congresswoman from California's 25th Congressional District, author of the upcoming book, She Will Rise, and founder of Her Time Pack. Welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Katie, I thank you so much for being here today. And this is really a momentous day. We're going to be airing this episode of the podcast in just a few days on August 11th, 2020, which coincides with two things. One, the launch of your book, as you said, She Will Rise. And the rest of the title in the book is Becoming a Warrior in the Battle for True Equality, which, yep, as we're talking, people will understand why that is. And it's also the 100-year anniversary of women being allowed to vote, which, yep, seems amazing. Yeah. Why was this particular date so important for you to launch your book, which is a memoir?
Yeah. Well, I really thought that it was important for us to bring attention to the fact that this is the 100-year anniversary. Technically, the anniversary, there are a few different anniversaries. There's the 19th, August 19th, which was the original publication date, or I guess it was the 18th, that we had to move because of the Democratic convention. But that was the date that Tennessee ratified the amendment, which was the last state needed to do it. The following week, the 26th, is when the Secretary of State signed it, really kind of centering on that and saying, how far have we come in the last 100 years, and how far do we really have to go? And the book is intended to point out that we have a long way to go still. And I've learned that through my own journey, and so many women experience it on a daily basis.
Well, I'd like to get into that, because the last 3 years have been quite the 3 years for you. In 2017, you decided to run for the 25th congressional seat on the House in the state of California. And in 2018, you won, and you were among the youngest members of the historic freshman class that flipped the House. You were also one of the first openly bisexual members of Congress, and you were elected by your colleagues to be the freshman co-representative of leadership, meaning that you worked directly with the Speaker of the House, who's an amazing woman, Nancy, yep, Pelosi.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following year, 2019, saw you resigning due to scandal. Can you let's talk about what precipitated you getting into politics in the first place?
Yeah, so I was not somebody who planned on running for office my whole life. I was working as the executive director of the largest homeless services organization in California. Public service is in my blood. My whole family, my dad's a cop, my mom's a nurse. And I was always planning on staying in the nonprofit sector. I loved it. I thought we were making a difference every single day. But then Donald Trump became president, and it became clear that there was, so many of the things that I dedicated my career to, and that were critical in addressing the needs of the people who are struggling the most in our communities were in jeopardy. Even the resources, the limited resources that already existed, were in jeopardy. And just the great indignity that came with Donald Trump's election was enough that I decided I needed to do something else. And to kind of speed things up, it turned out that my district, where I've spent my entire life, was one of the key districts in flipping the house. And the person who was supposed to run was the one who had ran previously and lost, even though Hillary Clinton won by a solid margin in my district. And finally, someone said, maybe you should run. And I said, you know what? Forget it. If Trump can get elected, then maybe I will. And yeah, and it was a really grassroots campaign. I was the total long shot, started out with just friends and family, and it just, it grew. And I think people were really inspired by, I was 29 at the time, just by a 29-year-old who was, a woman and approaching politics from a different way of saying that this is about truly representing the people and having somebody who is coming from a similar background, who wasn't trying to become a politician their whole life, who didn't come from money, who was there about fighting for the issues that everyone cared about. And that really resonated. And so we were able to build it into this really successful campaign. And ultimately we ended up winning by 9 points, which is one of the largest margins of victory for those competitive House seats.
Yes, it definitely is. And you were also on a number of committees when you were in Congress. And yep. Then something totally devastating just wiped out that particular part of your life. Instead of my giving a summary of it, why don't you tell us? Because I know that you go into it in your book, and I'd rather people hear it from you than my taking whatever's out there and parsing it.
Sure. Well, So I had been in an abusive relationship, and that was something that I'd met my now ex-husband when I was 16 years old, and I was with him for almost 16 years, or I guess almost 15 years. And it was a really toxic relationship. It was one that I'd known for a while that I shouldn't be in, but hadn't really figured out how to get out of. And I was... basically by the time that I got into office and was settled in there, I was just like, I have to leave. Well, that was in June of 2019. And a few months later, this is in October, my ex had apparently taken photos and released those photos of me naked, including with a woman that we were in a relationship, but she also worked on my campaign staff. And so it was the photos, the nude photos, but it was also the fact that I had a relationship with a former staffer that was problematic. And we were just going into impeachment. It was a coordinated attempt to really go after me from not only my ex-husband who shared the photos, but the right-wing media, and the Republican operatives that were in my district and a part of the national leadership that wanted that seat back. And apparently my husband had shared a file of over 700 different screenshots and images that I didn't even know existed. They said that they were just going to keep releasing it until I resigned. And I, with everything else that was going on with the impeachment and with not wanting to be a damaging to my, especially to my freshman colleagues who were also in these tough seats, I decided for them, for my staff, for what was best for my family and for me, that it would be best for me to step down. And so that's what I did. My final speech on the House floor was October 31st. But in that I said that I'm leaving here. I'm leaving the floor of the House of Representatives, but I'm not stopping the fight. And I'm figuring out what that next chapter is. And that next chapter is about trying to elect more women and trying to make sure that we are continuing the fight for equality and for justice and for making sure that the world is a better place for the next generation.
Well, actually, I know that it was reported that Speaker Pelosi really didn't want you to step down, but knew it was your decision. And what you actually said in that speech was, on behalf of the women of the United States of America, we will not stand down. We will not be broken. We will not be silenced. We will rise and we will make tomorrow better than today. I yield the balance of my time for now, but not forever. and here you are. But the other thing, you evidently are a strong woman.
Thank you.
I'd like you do mention in your book, though, that you did have, and I can just imagine, some really awful, awful moments. Mm-hmm. And one of those moments, which, as brief as it might have been, you had thoughts of suicide.
Yeah. Yeah. Like so many women who are the victims of cyber exploitation, otherwise known as revenge porn, I did experience suicidal ideation. And the reason I decided to share that was because I think it's important for people to understand that politicians, we might come to see them as this sort of other, this figure that's not really a person. But they are also people, and they do experience the same kinds of things that normal people do, because especially as we're trying to elect people who are representative of us, who have normal lives and a normal background. I feel like depression and suicide and the ramifications of something like cyber exploitation need to be discussed. And I have a bigger platform than most people do. And when I shared that story, I shared it first in an op-ed in the New York Times. I just got such overwhelmingly positive feedback about how people felt heard and seen, and that it meant a lot that I shared that.
It definitely does, because there's such a stigma and people are so afraid to talk about it. Mental health and depression, people don't understand that people do go through it. And there mm-hmm. are people who are living very successful lives yeah. who may have had that thought at yeah. some point, mm-hmm. But were able to pull themselves out from that and move forward.
Yeah.
I know that one of your goals of this book is to help young people move forward. I'd like to get into some of the topics in your book. One of your goals is to help young women to really be able to move forward and to take what you've gone through and say that not everything in life is smooth, but you can move forward. So what I'd like yeah. to talk about are some of the things in your book and the battles that women face. And you name quite a few of them. You have the workplace, you have battles with our body, safety, finance. Pick a couple of them and talk specifically about them.
Sure. Well, you know, I think kind of the way that I wanted to focus on it was that, you know, where are the biggest areas that we have major disparities, that, you know, to be able to overcome these barriers is what it's going to take for us to, you know, to truly reach equality. And if we can't take for granted our basic safety, our fundamental safety of whether it's sexual safety, either in the workplace or not, safety within the household with, you know, from domestic partners, from, you know, any kind of significant other, then it's very difficult to, without that basic safety. I mean, you're looking at like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you can't even assume your safety and your well-being, then, it's very hard to transcend beyond that. And so, I just discussed the epidemic of sexual assault and of the abuse that women face on a day-to-day basis. And then what are some steps that can be taken to try and prevent that and provide for consequences for perpetrators? And, you know, one of the big ones is that abuse is often misconstrued that it is only physical. And so I talk a lot about coercive control, which is a pattern of abuse and abusive behaviors. And there are many countries, or at least there are a few countries that specifically have made it a law, have defined abuse to include coercive control, rather than, you know, just punching or hitting or kicking. And I think that that's a step that we need to take in the United States as well. And certainly an educational one. We need to make sure that people understand that you shouldn't be asking people, well, did he hit you? Because there's so much more to it than that. I mean, then financial is the other big piece. If we can't get equal pay, if we can't, if our voices are silenced in the workplace, if we are experiencing some kind of discrimination, if we don't have financial independence in the household, then those are other things that you're not going to be able to be. We're not going to be at the same level. We're not going to achieve equality without that sort of basic. And so a lot of the workplace pieces, kind of, you know, workplace and equal pay, that ties into that financial security.
Well, one of the other things that you talk about is, you know, we started off that this is the 100 year anniversary of women being allowed to vote. And yes, in some things we've, you know, the saying was, you've come a long way, baby. Actually, that was an ad for Virginia Slim cigarettes a long time ago.
I didn't.
Where women were smoking. But the fact of the matter is, as far ahead as we've come, we've got a long way to go. What are some of the goals that you think need to be gotten to, strive for? And I know one of your most important words that you repeat is representation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, we kind of set it out. When I say we, I actually mean the goals that I outline in the book have become the goals of the PAC as well. And so, you know, there are these legislative goals that I think are all that kind of need to become this working feminist agenda. And one of them, which maybe doesn't necessarily sound like it fits right away until you think about it a little bit more, is it's called HR1, but it's about getting big money out of politics and removing barriers to entry into politics. So that includes something like public financing of campaigns, because again, women face so many more challenges in even crossing that initial threshold of whether it's raising money or having the right connections or being able to have someone take care of the kids or earn enough money to be able to take time off to be a candidate. So that prevents a lot of women from ever running for office in the first place. And the more influence there is of big money in politics, the less opportunity that leaves for regular people. So I put that as a really primary goal, one of the first ones that we need to tackle, because it clears the way for so many others. When you think about equal pay or ending mandatory arbitration or putting additional standards in place for regulations around the workplace to ensure non-discrimination, all of those are changes that corporations are going to fight against. And if corporations are the ones who are controlling our politicians through corporate money that's in politics, we're not going to get those changes made. So sort of follows this agenda of, you need to have people who are fighting for these issues, who are prioritizing these issues, and you need to have the people who are standing in the way of them gone. All of that comes down to, you know, the overarching goal, the one that I think makes it possible for everything else, is to get parity, which is an equal number of women who are holding office to the number of men. And even though we've made all of these gains, that this past cycle was the year of the woman, we still have less than a quarter of the seats in Congress. That number is pretty reflected in state legislatures and everywhere else as well. So, you know, when you think about how far we've come, the fact that we really only have half of the representation that we should have in public life is pretty telling.
Well, 1992 was considered Year of the Woman.
Yeah.
It tripled the number of women senators from 2 to 6.
Yeah.
Amazing. And then nothing happened, but 2016 woke up a lot of women on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah. And I think we need to keep that going, right? We can't let that kind of falter. And I know that it can be pretty easy to be so discouraged after the last few years. And, you know, many of us on the left-leaning side, I think we're, especially women, we're hoping for a woman to be the nominee for president again, just like Hillary was, kind of to avenge her.
One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, which you actually mentioned, was her time.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Sure. So this is the PAC that I created. I had already raised a significant amount of money for my reelection by the time that I resigned. And when you're in this kind of a situation, whether you don't run for reelection or you resign or you retire or whatever, as a candidate or a former an elected official, you can leave that money in place. And a lot of people do that. And you can give it out to other candidates just as you choose. Or you can leave it in case you ever decide to run for office again. But I decided, to convert my money into a PAC, into a political action committee, with the mission of helping to elect other women, specifically young women, women of color, women who are often need an extra boost, especially early on, to kind of cross that initial threshold of being considered electable or considered viable as candidates to get this support from other institutions or from other elected officials. So the goal of the PAC is to really be to kind of provide that extra lift and help people cross that initial hurdle. We're taking extra risks with, you know, races that might not be ones that people have on their priority list in terms of thinking it's possible for these women to win. And we're getting involved in primaries. And I think because it's a smaller PAC, it's newer, it's one that I was able to create the mission and direct kind of the direction of the PAC. We have a lot more freedom and flexibility to just try and be as helpful as possible for these women. So I'm excited about it. But the other thing that we're doing with the PAC that's a little bit unique is we're not just giving out money to these candidates, but we're trying to find ways of supporting certain races through additional spending on our parts on either texting or digital campaigns that that can target specifically young women and activate young women as voters to mobilize in support of these female candidates as well.
So your life did not end back in 2019, no matter what people tried doing. You are still here. So Katie, do you have, beyond the pact, what would you like to leave young women with? What would be your mantra?
I don't know if I can quickly boil it down into a single mantra, but just I guess the mantra would be, we will rise and we find a way. And we have this incredible amount of resiliency and strength that you often don't realize until you're totally tested. And I think the other thing is that it might seem insurmountable, but each day is a little bit easier. And you take dips. There are some days where you just feel like you can't get out of bed, but then it gets a little better each time. And for me, at least, having some kind of sense of purpose is really, really important to my recovery. If my sense of purpose was just like, how am I going to make money and make a living? I don't feel like that would be enough for me. So diverting or redirecting my energy into trying to help other women get elected, trying to tackle these institutional barriers that are in place towards achieving equality, that's where I feel like I can continue to make an impact. And hopefully my story can add to mobilizing other people around it and support other women in some way.
Well, I think you're doing a great job. I think you're packed her time. And I think your book is spot on and is so needed for young people to read right now. Remember, it's called She Will Rise. But I like the other part of it, which I will read, Becoming a Warrior in the Battle for True Equality. That's perfect.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Can you tell me, where can people find out more information? Of course, everyone knows a book, Amazon and anyone else.
So two websites that are important. SheWillRiseBook.com is a good one because we actually list out the resources. So if you need help, it's kind of a quick and boiled down way to find some of these really critical resources. For example, if you or someone you know is a victim of some form of sexual assault or cyber exploitation, if you need resources on how to, you know, if you might be a victim of discrimination in the workplace, things like that. So we listed out some of the top resources there and also ways to get involved if that's something that you're interested in. And the other is her-time.com, and that's the PAC. That's where you can find out the information about the candidates that we're supporting, the goals of the PAC, and general information about kind of what we're trying to achieve and how we're trying to get there.
Well, Katie, as I said before, for everyone who's listening, this comes out and it will be the episode debuts in just a few days, August 11th, 2020, the 100-year anniversary of women getting the vote. Somehow, Katie, I think you're on to not just one new journey, but several more. And who knows, maybe we'll see you back in politics.
And you never know.
Quite young.
I'm young, so.
That's right, 32. You have another 40-some odd years, if not more.
It's true.
40 years. Very true.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if my energy lasts that long.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was great talking to you.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Upper Deck, the national full-service virtual gym that has reinvented the at-home workout experience. Upper Deck has more than 30 strength and cardio classes a week. Named Best Fitness Club in the Gold Coast for 2020, Upper Deck brings the gym to you with live coaching and motivation. Upper Deck's unique classes are interactive. They have two coaches, one leading your workout and one keeping her eyes on you, providing feedback and encouragement in real time. For a free week of unlimited virtual classes with no strings attached, email info@upperdeckfitness.com and let Upper Deck know you're a Sylvia and Me listener. Thank you for joining me today. On our next podcast, I'll be talking to another extraordinary, inspiring woman who has made her mark on the world. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform and, of course, our website, sylviaandme.com. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to keep up with the latest episodes. Review, rate, and take us with you wherever you are. I want to hear from you. If you know of an extraordinary, inspiring woman, please contact me at sylvia@lifeofprey.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay safe. This has been a Life of Prey production.